fan. On demand. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Sign up to automatically receive the latest reports, features, and Fan 590 show highlights. UFC Central. UFC Central with Showdown Joe.
Are you ready?
Welcome to UFC Central. I'm your host, Showdown Joe, for the next hour. We're going to talk some mixed martial arts, UFC, and everything in between on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network. And my co-host this evening, as always, one of the greatest, best guys in the industry, writes some of the best stuff you will ever read for MMA Junkie and USA Today. It is the infamous Mike Bond. Mike, what's going on, my man?
Not too much. Thank you for the lovely introduction. I appreciate it.
First things first, you're becoming a world traveler. Where are you now?
I'm in Toronto at the moment, here for a bit. I was all over the place during the summer, got to go down to the States for some shows and whatnot, and then was back in Vancouver visiting some family, but now I'm in Toronto. Don't plan on going anywhere for a little while, except over to the Halifax show next month, which should be a good one.
Well, yeah, Rory McDonald taking on Tarek Saffiedine, obviously a contender bout. Johnny Hendricks recently stated he's not coming back until the spring, which I don't think bodes well for the winner of that fight, especially if it's Rory McDonald. I mean, it's sort of weird. Johnny Hendricks is the welterweight champ, and, you know, Anthony Pettis is the lightweight champ, but these guys aren't fighting. Is that one of those things? Like, I mean, for me, it drives me nuts. I want to see these champions defend their titles, but injuries happen. I mean, what's your thoughts on all this?
Yeah, I mean, especially right now, it's really unfortunate with the UFC. I mean, Cain Velasquez hasn't fought this year either. John Jones only fought once. So a lot of these guys have just been on the sidelines. Aldo, I believe, has only fought once this year. So they've had a really rough year when it comes to the champions. But, I mean, what can you really do, these guys, especially when they need major surgeries like a Velasquez who needs 9 months, 10 months to get his shoulder right? It's just... it's part of the sport. There's nothing you can really do. But in hindsight, for Johnny Hendricks, I mean, it makes Rory McDonald's decision, especially after when he, Woodley, he said, I think I need to fight again. It makes that decision look even better in hindsight now that Hendricks isn't coming back for a while.
Yeah, so when you think about that for Rory McDonald, if he does emerge victorious in October, the time frame for a fight in September, in the first quarter of 2015 is great. But that'll be taken up by Johnny Hendricks and Robbie Lawler. So do you think Rory may have to fight again if he does emerge victorious versus Tarek, or should he wait?
I mean, in that position, it might be a better call to wait, but I don't really know. I mean, that fight isn't even set yet. We still have another month to go until Rory and Tarek fight, so maybe by then there will be a date announced for Hendricks and Lawler, and then maybe he will have a better idea. He'll know, okay, this is a better time frame of where I'll be able to fight, but I don't know. I would maybe take another fight, and Rory's been really open about that. He's been saying that I'm going to have to fight everyone anyway, so why not fight them on the way to the belt instead of after I capture the belt? So I think he has the right mindset, and I think he's one of those guys who will be open to whatever really is best for him.
Yeah, it's got me thinking in terms of what will happen with his career, because I know Faraz Ahabi is going to be just outside of Toronto in a couple of weeks, the weekend of the next pay-per-view for the UFC, with Demetrius Johnson defending his title against Chris Carrios, so, you know, he'll be in town. Faraz will be in town about 45 minutes north of Toronto, Fitness Kickboxing Canada. He'll be there with Miles Jury. Miles actually competing this weekend. We'll get to that momentarily. But I'm going to see if I can pick Faraz's brain to see what he's planning on doing with Rory. Of course, the whole situation with George St. Pierre. I was thinking about this yesterday with some friends of mine, Mike. You give me your thoughts. If Johnny Hendricks loses his title to Robbie Lawler and there isn't a rematch with Robbie Lawler, and with Dana White saying if George St. Pierre wants to come back, he gets an automatic title shot, do you think a champion by the name of Robbie Lawler would be suffice enough for George St. Pierre to say, wait a second, I've already beaten Johnny on paper once, maybe I will come back and take on Robbie Lawler? You think that'll be a little carrot dangling for George to perhaps come back?
Maybe, but honestly, at this point, I don't think George is going to come back. I think it's been a while. We really had the immediate reaction of him announcing his hiatus or whatever he's calling it from the sport, and everyone's like, oh, he's going to come back. He's not. But I think at this point, so much time has passed. I would be surprised if he came back, but maybe. I mean, Lawler is a new challenge. He's a guy he's never fought before, so maybe that'll be enough to lure him back. And he's not, like, even though Lawler's looked completely different lately and he's a reinvigorated fighter, he's not one of these new generation guys. He's been fighting as long or longer than George has, so I think that would be a matchup that would maybe spark his interest. But at this point, I would be very, very surprised if we are fighting the UFC again.
funny enough, while we're speaking right now, literally just popping up on my screen right now, a message from Francis Carmont's Facebook page. I announced that after, this is a quote, I announced that after 6 wins and 3 defeats, I'm no longer a UFC fighter. However, it is with determination that I will continue my career in combat sports. A friend told me after my loss against Thales, you will come to understand it is the best thing that could have happened for your career. It'll make you stronger. At that moment, I did not quite understand. And after reflecting, I came to auto-criticize myself. I come to the conclusion that in sports, just like in life, there are many and different stages. By looking for perfection on my technique, I slowly estrange myself from the combat by instinct, seeking to score points instead of finishing my opponent. My last loss pushes me to grow every day. Life is a learning path, and my career is far from over or finished. Thank you very much for your constant support. End quote. So Francis Carmont has announced that he's been released by the organization. I'll be honest with you, no surprise, in my opinion, coming in to that fight with Thales. I thought he had to win that fight to save his UFC career. Are you surprised by any of this at all?
I'm not. I mean, maybe a little bit, because you see he is still ranked despite the 3-fight losing streak. He's ranked in that UFC's top 15, I believe. So it is a little surprising, but man, he just hasn't looked that great lately. Obviously, the loss to Thales Leites was devastating, especially since he got stopped in that one. It wasn't decision or anything. So I can see it. I mean, he hasn't, some of his fights haven't been that exciting. Some of the wins he's had were really close and somewhat controversial, a few of those decisions he got. So his record could be even worse than what it is now, which is unfortunate to say, but you never know. Like, he said it right. I mean, the sport is so crazy, the ups and the downs. 3-fight losing streak today can mean absolutely nothing in 2 years. Look at Andrei Arlovsky. Dude was on a 4-fight losing streak. He'd be knocked out in like 3 fights. Everyone said he was done, and now he's back in the UFC and he's a top heavyweight. So the sport has so many ups and downs, so many twists and turns, that Francis Carmont could look like he's no longer worthy of being a UFC fighter now, but 2 years, you never know.
Well, as it stands right now, he is ranked number 15. I'm sure he'll be removed from the rankings shortly, as he has been released by the organization. Give it 24 hours or so, he'll be removed. We're on the line right now with Mike Bohn. You can follow Mike on Twitter, at Mike Bohn MMA. Bohn is spelled B-O-H-N. Give him a follow on Twitter. He's got a great Instagram page as well. You mentioned Andrei Arlovsky, Mike. I didn't see it coming. I really thought, despite the 9-month layoff, Bigfoot would be too much for Arlovsky to handle. And my, was I wrong. And I was smiling ear to ear when he won the fight. I'm very happy for him, because I was there at his last fight, or his second last fight with the UFC, when he eventually got released. He was in the post-fight press conference, standing off to the side and wondering what was going on with his career. And despite the victory, he did get cut by the organization. He came back versus Brendan Schaub, emerged victorious in a controversial victory, then goes to Brazil, Brasilia specifically, Antonio Bigfoot Silva's hometown, and defeats him, destroys him. I mean, did you see that one coming at all?
No, I did not. I mean, I believe everyone except maybe one person on the MMA Junkie staff picked Bigfoot to win. I think just after, how could really anyone be on the Andrei Arlovsky train after that fight he had with Brendan Schaub in Vancouver? It was just, it showed absolutely nothing. It made you think, why did the UFC bring this guy back? All that stuff. He kind of made it clear that he didn't even think he won the fight. So everyone was surprised when they gave him this main event. And they thought, oh, it's in Bigfoot's hometown in Brasilia, kind of just a squash match for him. And then Andre comes out and he has that speed advantage pretty clearly at the beginning. And then he caught him and put him down.
Well, you take a look at the rankings right now, and the heavyweight's a completely different organization than, or different division than any other one, because a couple of wins and you are in title contention. I mean, as it stands right now, Andrei Arlovsky's ranked number 7. Ahead of him is Mark Hunt, Josh Barnett, Stipe Miocic, Travis Brown, Junior Dos Santos, and Fabricio Werdum. Now, Werdum obviously is taking on Cain Velasquez later this year. You know, the whole Junior Dos Santos thing, he's waiting to come back. Travis Brown, ranked at number 3. He's got Brendan Schaub coming up. Stipe Miocic doesn't have an opponent, to my understanding. Josh Barnett has no one. And we know Mark Hunt is taking on Roy Big Country Nelson, number 8 in the rankings. I don't know how Arlovsky is ahead of Roy Nelson in the rankings, to be honest with you, but it's an amalgamation of various media members that vote on this. Arlovsky, in my opinion, with this division, can be 1 or 2 wins away. And maybe not one, but at least 2 at minimum away from potentially challenging for the title. I think, and you tell me if I'm wrong or if you agree or disagree, that with another victory or two, I think UFC fans would be banging on Dana White's door saying, hey, give this guy a title shot.
Yeah, well, especially if he comes out and puts people away like he did to Bigfoot. I mean, he's not going to get any of that support if he puts on performances like he did against Brendan Schaub, but if he comes out and keeps knocking people out, absolutely, that's all it takes in this division, even though the fact he's, I believe, 35, going on 36 soon, so he's obviously up there, but he's had all the experience. He's won the belt before, and I think he still has a name in that division. I mean, the heavyweights, they need that kind of stuff, and the ring of being former UFC heavyweight champion, that still means something, even if his title reign came, whatever, 6-7 years ago. So I think I agree with you. If he wins another fight, especially, obviously, he's going to be getting a name in the top 10, someone that can move him towards that. I could totally see it, especially right now. There's no clear number one contender to fight the winner of Cain Velasquez and Fabricio Werdum.
Absolutely. And you know, Junior Dos Santos, even if he does defeat somebody, whether it's, you know, Stipe or not, or someone, he's not going to get a title shot because he has lost. He's already fought Cain 3 times, so he's not getting a title shot anytime soon. So this division could be very interesting in 2015. One thing I'm looking at, Brendan Schaub is not even ranked on UFC.com in the rankings in the top 15, yet he's fighting the number 3, Travis Brown. If Brendan Schaub wins that fight, these rankings are going to be a complete mess. I mean, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, the heavyweight rankings already are kind of a mess. I mean, we do our own version, including all of MMA over at MMA Junkie, like featuring any organization. And we were discussing the heavyweight, and it's just a gong show. It's just this one guy has beaten this guy. It's just a totem pole, and it's hard to like leapfrog the dude who just beat this dude over everyone else. It's a mess up there. So especially if Schaub comes in and gets that upset too, that would be crazy. But yeah, that just goes to show the heavyweight division is so unpredictable. It only takes one punch, and it can all change so quickly.
As a proud Canadian, and that's two of us that are speaking right now, have you ever used the term gong show to an American?
I believe so, yeah.
And have you seen their reaction? They're like, what? What does that mean? I don't know what it is about some of my American counterparts or our pals, even over at Junkie and some of the other sites, our peers. Every time I would mention the words gong show, they're like, huh? I don't think they know what it means.
Yeah, I think that's a little bit of Canadian slang for us, but it's all good.
Your latest tweet on your timeline reflects the fact the main event happening in Japan with Mark Hunt and Roy Big Country Nelson. I'm very intrigued by this fight, and on this week's UFC Central, I went completely against my brain. I broke down the fight on paper, and I looked at the analysis, I looked at the percentages, I looked at history, and on paper, Mark Hunt is going to destroy Roy Big Country Nelson, but no pun intended, I'm going with my gut. I am going with Roy Nelson in this fight here. Basically, if you look at the fight metric stats, you've got Mark Hunt, who's a better striker, lands more productive, better takedown artist, better, you know, defender of the takedowns, has a slight reach advantage. They're similar in age, so all things considered, everything is pointing to a Mark Hunt victory. I just think Roy, you know, Big Country Nelson's going to win this fight, and I'll go as far as saying I won't be surprised if he, you know, scores some sort of submission. How do you break down this fight?
It's a hard one. I mean, it's one of those things. Another, like we were talking about heavyweights before, obviously these two guys, two of the hardest hitters in that weight class, so anything could really happen, but they also have the chins to back it up. So who really knows? We could have a crazy back and forth slugfest reminiscent of Antonio Silva and Mark Hunt.
Oh, can you imagine?
Year.
Oh my goodness. Can you imagine that? Wow.
You never know. Or could go out there and it could be another Roy Nelson 30-second knockout like we've seen him do so many times in the UFC. So it's really hard to say, but I think you kind of said it perfectly. If you look at the numbers, I mean, Mark Hunt has defended, I believe, almost 90% of all takedown attempts against him in the UFC, and Roy Nelson has only had, I believe, 2 takedowns landed in however 12 or so UFC fights. So on paper, it looks like this one's going to be a stand-up fight. Roy Nelson, maybe he will finally go to that well and try to take it to the ground, but I really have a feeling it's in Japan. Roy Nelson loves to put on a show. I think he's going to try to stand in this one, and it's really hard to say. Whoever lands first could easily put the other person down, but I like Mark Hunt's versatility. I think he's a little bit more dynamic. He doesn't really go to that one overhand that Roy Nelson seems to rely on a ton, even though he is adding to that. But I like Mark Hunt here. I think he's going to just be able to be a little quicker than Roy on his feet. He's going to mix it up a little more, and I think he's either going to take a 5-round marathon or maybe land an early knockout.
Did you write your typical 3-star article? Your 3 stars of UFC, the one that just took place in Brazil, UFC Fight Night?
Yes, I did.
Who did you pick?
I believe it was number 1 was Arlovski, of course. I believe Pepe was number two.
Yes, Pepe looked fantastic in that fight.
I want to say, let me see here. I believe Jessica Andrade was my number three. Yes, Jessica Andrade, who looked amazing as well. And then Pepe was number two. Arlovski was number one.
Somewhere in there, I mean, when I did my three stars and we're talking to the producers of the TV side for UFC Central, it never made it onto the show. We were going to do the three stars because that's a Canadian thing. For those that do, for those international listeners to the show, in hockey, in ice hockey, at the end of every hockey game, there are always three stars that are selected generally by the broadcast. Team, and it's a Canadian thing that Mike and I have been doing for quite some time. Who are your three stars? Some people don't understand why we do it. It is what it is. But one guy I thought that I was going to put in there, I think I was going to make him number two, was Santiago Ponzinibbio. I mean, that fight against Wendell Oliveira, I was so impressed with Wendell Oliveira. I know the fight lasted all of 80 seconds, but I was watching the fight and I thought, Wendell Oliveira, this guy's a beast. He has no respect whatsoever for Santiago. He may be getting tagged. He doesn't care. He looks like an absolute monster. When he lands, he is going to destroy Santiago, and quickly, it was over. I mean, Ponzinibbio just basically destroyed him, and, you know, TKO'd him with some serious power. I thought to myself, this kid's Argentinian. This kid belongs some way, somehow, on this Latin show that's going to take place in Mexico City with Cain Velasquez taking up Fabrizio Verdum, the Ultimate Fighter Latin America finale. I'm really liking Santiago. I mean, your thoughts on his fight?
Yeah, he looked awesome as well. I mean, that... Even though there was a little bit of controversy around the stoppage, I thought it was a perfect stoppage. I mean, Wendell went down, kind of did that weird thing, similar to what happened with Benson Henderson, Rafael Dos Anjos, where he kind of snaps back and he looks out, but then once he hits the ground, he gets back up. But I thought it was a great stoppage. I thought Santiago looked fantastic. He had a tough UFC debut when he fought Ryan LaFleur last year. But Ryan LaFleur, I mean, you look at what he's doing in his own career. He's killing it. He's undefeated. So that loss doesn't look bad at all in hindsight. And he's a guy, I believe Santiago's the only Argentinian fighter right now on the UFC roster. So he's a guy that, you know, could be, I believe I wrote about this in my Joe Silva's Choose Matchmaker article, that he's a guy they should bring along slowly and kind of build up, because if they ever do, I don't really know what the UFC has planned for the rest of South America, if they ever do plan on hitting Argentina, but if they do, this is a guy that could really help them move into that market.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. I'm trying to catch up as well on the Ultimate Fighter Latin America episodes on UFC Fight Pass, and I think there are one, maybe two more guys that are on that show. And if they do emerge, you know, if they do advance in the tournament, there's some more guys there. Because you got to wonder, what is that Argentinian market like? And if you think globally, I mean, we hear Dana White and you know, guys like Victor Cui from ONE FC and so many people talk about the Asian market. How big is India going to be, and China, and Hong Kong and Japan? And so, I mean, we know Japan is sort of in an influx right now, but there's so many different markets around the world, and you got to think Argentina's got a huge population base. There's obviously going to be a natural rivalry between Argentinians and Brazil that stem from soccer. That's embedded in their bloodlines. There's a situation when you look at some of these markets and you think to yourself, yeah, you got to build these guys properly, and if you can get them to co-main event or main event like a Conor McGregor is doing in Ireland, I mean, this sport is continuing to grow. I mean, I know I took some heat. I don't know if you read my article recently about, you know, how the landscape of the UFC fan base has to sort of accept the fact that events are happening around the world at different times, at different time zones. You've got to respect the different time zones, and, you know, you've got Fight Pass. Thank you to Fight Pass. You know, it's only $9.95 a month. Some people can afford it. Some people don't want to afford it. It is what it is, but this landscape of mixed martial arts, specifically the UFC, is changing, and I think people really need to accept it.
Yeah, no, I did read the article. I thought it was great, and you made some great points. I mean, this sport, I believe Dana White even said this when we had a scrum. I can't remember which event it was a month or so ago. This is just the way the sport's going. This isn't the UFC that we knew a few years ago. It's completely changing, and they're moving into different markets, and they're putting events on at times that may not be suitable for this audience, like coming up on Friday. I believe the Roy Nelson and Mark Hunt main card starts at 3 a.m. Eastern. So this isn't the same company as it was before, and they're doing pretty much everything they can for global expansion to make as many markets happy as possible. So it's really changing, and it's going to continue to change going forward. And people really either need to get on board with that or don't, or they can really do however they feel about being a fan of the sport as it's changing.
Well, that was my intention. I mean, my comparison to, I mean, I was thinking when I was actually writing the article, Mike, the fact that every time you want to make a point, I feel like a lawyer where you have to sort of backtrack on the point. Well, I mean this, but I also mean this, and that. And it's like it got to the point where I kept rewriting it because I'm like, listen, this is my opinion. I'm not trying to offend anybody. I'm not here to offend the hardcore fans. So if you look at FIFA as an example, FIFA oversees soccer around the world. I'm not saying the UFC is going to be FIFA, but with their brand, they are going to oversee all these different markets. They are in charge of their own markets, like FIFA is. I mean, I look at the UFC, and I don't think, major four sports in North America. I think they're going to be bigger than that in terms of globally. Yeah, they'll have to compete against the baseball, the NBA or MLB and NHL and NFL, fine, in North America. But around the world, it's a different beast altogether. And I don't know why people got so offended by it. I kind of, I didn't mean to laugh it off, but I was like, wow, you guys are just, everyone needs to relax. It's just an opinion.
Yeah, and kind of just to repeat what I said before, the sport is just so different than any other sport in the world. Dana White says it all the time, and it sounds so corny to people who have followed the sport, but this is just, it's so much easier to understand than anything else. It translates to all the different cultures, and for that, it makes it easier for them to expand, and I completely agree with what you're saying in the fact that they just need to make this happen globally, and it's unlike any other sport out there that can try to do this. No one else can do this the way they can, and people kind of need to understand that the UFC isn't just a North American U.S. company anymore. It's a global company, and that's the direction they're moving towards.
Yeah, I did mention the fact, I know I threw in the price of Fight Pass at $9.95, which, a guy in my position, it's obviously inexpensive to afford that. I'm blessed to do what I do. But at the same time, if I'm a hardcore fan and I think to myself, if I love the UFC and I really want to see it, like, for example, I'm a huge soccer fan. I'm a massive soccer fan. I'm also a big NHL fan. If I choose to watch more hockey or more soccer, there are avenues for me to subscribe to doing it. If I find value in it, I will order it. If I don't find value in it because I don't have time to watch every single Juventus game, every single Serie A game, every single Bayern Munich game, every single Toronto Maple Leaf and Edmonton Oilers and Calgary Flames and Montreal Canadiens game, I won't spend the money. All I was simply saying is if it's value, buy it. If it's not value, don't buy it, but don't bitch about it.
Yeah. I think Fight Pass is a great deal, especially with what they're doing now. They're adding so much stuff to it. They have Invicta on there. There's rumors there could be stuff like Metamoris and other smaller promotions. So it's a great deal. If you are a fan of the sport and you want to watch future events, past events, anything, it's a great tool, and I would recommend it to anyone. Obviously I have it, and even if you only watch the live fights, this card coming up this weekend is absolutely awesome. There's some great fights on there, and that alone I believe is worth the price of the Fight Pass, the $9.99 every month.
Yeah, we'll talk about that fight or that event momentarily. And then one thing I want to bring up another topic to you as well, which has to do with my FIFA comment. And I think the listeners will kind of understand what I'm talking about. You mentioned the one thing about Fight Pass. There's Invicta, which is absolutely unreal. A quick example was when I got a call from my producer from UFC Central saying, listen, we're going to put together the top five knockouts of Andrei Arlovsky's career. Which ones are your favorite? And I'm like, holy smokes, he's had like seven or eight, I think. I got to go back and watch these fights. I pull up Fight Pass, Mike, and I went to every single one of Arlovsky's fights, was able to fast forward to the very end, click the knockout, and be like, okay, one, two, three, no, that one's not good, four, five, boom. It was so perfect for me, a guy trying to do his job like that. It was absolutely amazing. So that's just another benefit for me in terms of Fight Pass. But coming up after the break, we are going to discuss a certain thing about why I consider the UFC sort of like FIFA, as well as break down Saturday's card and much, much more from the world of mixed martial arts. You're listening to UFC Central on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network.
Cooler than Math Club and almost as cool as Chess Club. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. UFC Central. UFC Central with Showdown Joe.
Are you ready?
Welcome back to UFC Central. I'm your host, Showdown Joe. We're talking mixed martial arts, UFC, and everything in between on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network. My co-host this evening is the infamous Mike Bond. You can follow Mike online via Twitter at MikeBondMMA. He is a journalist for USA Today and MMAJunkie.com, one of the best in the industry, a fellow Canadian, so please give him love. Mike, some thoughts about UFC and FIFA. And the reason why I mentioned FIFA was because, you know, soccer's so big. Soccer's absolutely huge. There are so many amazing leagues around the world. The top, obviously, are mostly in Europe. You got some great stuff in competitions like Champions League, the World Cup, the Euros, the South American Cup, the Copa America. It's a massive sport. A body that oversees it is one thing. If you look at the UFC, and people are forever mentioning watered down, the product is watered down. I guess part of it, Mike, isn't the fact that the UFC is just the Super Bowl of mixed martial arts or the big show, but they're also sort of the almost that what used to be that grassroots where guys were building their careers to get to the big show. They've taken over that layer as well, and I think they've taken over another layer sort of underneath that, where the grassroots or the shows that were getting guys to grassroots to the show before the UFC and then to get to the UFC. Do you understand my analogy there?
Yeah, definitely. Go ahead.
No, I'm just simply saying that people are considering it watered down, but it's just the fact that the UFC has 500 guys and girls on their roster that they're not only the big show, they've got layers and layers underneath, hence the prelims, and hence people are saying, I have no idea who's fighting who and blah, blah. Well, that's just them taking over so much of the mixed martial arts, you know, athletic roster.
Yeah, and I mean, it depends. I think it's okay to feel any way about it. I mean, the UFC used to bang the drum that we only have the best fighters in the world, and that's still true. They still have probably 90% of the or 95% of the best fighters in the world, but they also do have a lot of fighters that aren't even close to being the best fighters in the world. And MMA is a sport that's incredibly, incredibly difficult to be elite at and do really well. And there's only a handful of people through all the weight classes that are really that good. And if you're one of these people that you only are really interested in watching the elite of the elite fight in MMA, then that's understandable. You have that right. I mean, some people just don't want to watch some of these lower tier guys, and that's probably why they call it watered down, because it's not, the cards aren't like they used to be. They're more spread out. I believe Dave Schaller, the head of UFC PR, tweeted the other day being like, we have all these amazing fights coming up in the next 2 or 3 weeks. And I looked at that and I thought, oh, wow, what if that was all one fight card like it used to be? Like, how insane would that be? So it really depends how you feel about it. I think it's okay if you think the UFC is more watered down and not the same quality that it used to be, and it's okay if you don't feel that way.
Absolutely. I mean, to each their own. I mean, I just don't understand, you know, the venom, the cobra venom, the bitching and complaining. I mean, it is what it is. Just, I don't understand why people just can't accept it. Accept what it is right now. Enjoy it. I mean, I've got so many friends that have been around me for such a long time. They literally only want to watch main events and co-main events. You know, and that's cool. That's fine, right? They'll turn to me and ask me, what about this guy here fighting on the main card, or this guy here that's headlining the prelim card? You know, I'll give my explanation sort of thing. But to them, they just want to see the best of the best. And you get that with any UFC event whatsoever. Even if it's a fight night, you know, with Arlovski taking on Bigfoot Silva, or, you know, Big Country taking on Mark Hunt. Watch the main event. Watch the co-main event. It is what it is. But if you're a hardcore fan, you want to see these guys develop, I would much rather, to be honest with you, make, you know, and this is a definite greedy perspective, Mike. I would much rather watch guys develop under the UFC banner at times and develop on the grassroots shows around the world, because I may not have access to those shows out there. I'd have to do a search on YouTube. I'd have to do a search online, try and find this video, try and find that video. They get to the UFC. Now I can sit there under one banner, one card, and watch them develop. It's almost like the UFC has, you know, like Shudo back in the old days, or still does, you know, A, B, and C classes. And you want to see a guy develop in the C class, eventually get to the B class, and from the B class get to the A class. I mean, I have no problem with that whatsoever.
Yeah. At the same time, though, you see, it's so hard for people to distinct. A lot of people still think UFC is UFC.
Yes.
So, like, when there is a guy who has a couple fights, say, like, a Justin Scoggins or something, who's, like, 21, 22, he comes in and he just runs over 2-3 guys that are probably the C class, B class you were talking about. Then they throw him in there in the A class with a guy like John Moraga, like he fought last time, and he gets submitted, loses. And you kind of think, even though he looked really good in that fight, maybe he wasn't quite ready for this yet. But just because he did so well against those C class guys and it was in the UFC, people think, oh, he's ready for these guys. But if those ones were on the regional scene and then he came into the UFC, people obviously wouldn't be throwing him to a matchup that quickly. So it's hard, the perception of the UFC. It's so hard to distinguish, because they still want to be UFC's number one, best in the world, best fighters are all here. But at the same time, they are trying to develop fighters under that banner, which in some cases, may rush or ruin their development as fighters.
I think that's a perfect analogy, because Justin Scoggins is one of those guys who looked absolutely fantastic in that fight, looked amazing, and then just sort of went to the well too often and got guillotined out. But I think it's a great example, and I'm wondering in my head, you know, if the UFC should sort of present it in a manner, not just the fact that they're the big show, the Super Bowl of MMA, but, you know, I don't think they ever will, but to get people to understand, like, this is the level of this fight, or these fighters, this is the other level, and this is the big show sort of thing. And I understand that, you know, prelims and fight cards, but can you imagine if you knew ahead of time that, you know, you're watching a development fight sort of thing under the UFC banner where, you know, it's UFC C-class, and, you know, the opportunity to now move up to the B-class of the UFC, and then the B-class eventually get to the A-class. I don't think they'll ever do that, but do you get what I'm saying there?
Yeah, I do. It's just so weird because, in a way, if you really want to think about it, they do almost have that in terms of, like, their tier system. Like, they have Fight Pass, which obviously you see some guys, like, on the like a Royston Wee on the Tough China card, where he's like 2-1 or 2-0 or something. And then obviously we have the Fox Sports 1 cards and then the pay-per-view, which is, so in a way there is that tier system, but they do kind of ruin it in a way by throwing, like, an amazing fight like a Roy Nelson versus Mark Hunt on Fight Pass, or a Luke Rock versus Michael Bisping coming up in November. So they kind of mix it in that way. But the thing they're doing with the Fight Pass shows, so they're almost doing that where they throw like one or two really good fights at the top of the card, then the rest under that is basically just like development league stuff. And then the Fox Sports 1 shows, the main cards are pretty much all really good, and then prelims are not really a ton of those higher level names. So in a way it is kind of like that, but they aren't going to outright come and tell you that's what it is.
I personally, Mike, I think it'd be absolutely fantastic, and it was something that I loved about Shooto back in the day, because you got to see the development of the fighter, a beginner to an intermediate to a sort of an advanced level. It's what I pitched, you know, to the government here in terms of amateur MMA. You know, you develop these guys, and it's basically transparent, right? You can see right through it all. You know that this is a C class fight. Getting to a B, the winner gets to B class, and then develops in the B class, and then he gets to the A class. I think it'd be interesting if the UFC ever thought of something like that. They never will, I'm just saying, but it'd be interesting to know that as a viewer, you know that this guy and this guy have the potential of moving up a tier. You know, I love the system, the tier system, as you mentioned, but that's another conversation for another day. We can discuss that at another time. Now, back to this Japan card happening overseas. It is a UFC Fight Pass only card. It will not air on Sportsnet. I know people are going to rip me on that. It's always my fault, and I'm to blame for all of it, Mike, and you know that's true. But this event taking place in Japan, it is commencing at 12:30 a.m. Eastern time. That is the prelim card, and then the main card obviously starting, kicking things off at about 3:30 a.m. Eastern time. Now, Mark Hunt and Roy Nelson, we discussed that. Miles Jury, who I mentioned earlier in the show, will be at Fitness Kickboxing Canada at the end of the month. I'll be up there on Sunday to interview him and Faraz Zahabi. He's taking on Takanori Gomi. This fight on paper is one thing, the reality is another. I will go with Miles Jury in this boat here, if not strictly for that youth advantage.
Yeah, it's hard. Even though I do have a soft spot for Gomi, he's one of the guys that I've like first really got me into the sport, and I was a fan of way back in the Pride days. But this isn't a very good matchup for him. It's one of those things. Gomi's probably going to come in and he's going to be throwing those huge overhands and hooks that he loves to throw pretty wild. And Jury is probably just going to stay composed and use that jab and a lot of foot movement. It's kind of similar to the Diego Sanchez fight in terms of what Jury has to prepare for and an opponent who's going to be coming at him and, you know, pretty much just throwing caution to the wind. So if Jury stays composed, you never really know. Him going over to Japan, it's Gomi's home turf. Gomi's obviously much more comfortable fighting there. And Gomi has, when he has fought in Japan for the UFC, he's looked really good. I believe he's 2-1, with the only loss being that really controversial decision to Diego Sanchez. So this is a fun matchup. This could be fight of the night material, but I think Jury, if he keeps his game plan tight, he will probably pick Gomi apart and maybe even finish it with a submission or something like that.
And then a welterweight battle between Yoshihiro Akiyama. Sexyama's finally back after being away for about 40 years. And the same thing with Amir Sadala. He's been away for probably 30 years. I mean, these guys have not competed in a very long time. It is the welterweight division. I think a lot is on the line in the scrap here. And I'm talking about their job security for sure. I'm going to go with Amir Sadala again. Just looking at the way this fight breaks down, I'll go with Amir. But it is Akiyama, a lot of pride competing in Japan. I mean, anything can happen. A fight's a fight, but I will go with Amir Sadala on this boat.
It's just so hard to say because, like you mentioned, these guys haven't fought in so long. So who even knows really what their skill sets are like? Have they been training full time? Have they been just taking a lot of that time off to recover from injuries and just take it easy? It's really hard to say. And there are two guys. I mean, Akiyama doesn't really do any media. Haven't seen much from him leading up to this fight. So we don't really know what he's been doing in his absence. Amir Sadala has talked a little bit more, but still a similar thing. So maybe you can really only judge this on what the two fighters were like when we saw them both over 2 years ago. And I think based off that, I like Akiyama here. He's in a huge slump, four losses in a row. Those were all against really, really, really tough guys, though. And Sadala, I mean, he's a guy, he's one of the few, I believe him and Matt Mitrione are the only guys that have had all their UFC or all their professional fights in the UFC. So he's grown up on that stage. He knows what it's like to fight this top competition. But I think Akiyama's judo, if he can get it in close quarters, I think he should be able to control Amir, especially if he gets on the ground. But if it stays standing, it's a lot more interesting fight because Amir obviously has that solid Muay Thai game and he's the longer fighter.
You mentioned fight of the night potentially between Miles Jury and Takanori Gomi. And I would still maintain, at least for another, I'm going to go 3 or 4 months, that women, whenever the women compete, they generally steal fight of the night. And Misha Tate is taking on Rin Nakai. And most people are like, who? Rin Nakai. Well, let me tell you something about Rin Nakai. She's 16-0. Google her. R-I-N, last name Nakai, N-A-K-A-I. You will absolutely fall in love with this girl. She's 5'1", obviously a bantamweight, 16-0, 4 knockouts or TKOs, 6 submissions, 6 decisions. She is a badass, in my opinion. She actually does have one draw, excuse me. At the same time, most people don't know who she is, but she's been around for a long time, competing in Pancrase alone, Smack Girl competitions as well. She is a bad, bad young lady. Misha Tate, I don't think will overlook her at all and has trained very, very hard for this. But Rin Nakai is a bad, bad woman. Your thoughts on this fight?
Oh, I'm so excited for this. I mean, Rin Nakai, when they first announced this fight and that they were signing her, I was so excited. Hardcore fans know who she is and know she's just a very interesting character. Wears like dresses and stuff to the open workouts and the weigh-ins. Just a really, really interesting character. And she sells to that Japanese audience that, you know, like a little, something a little bit different. And it should be an awesome fight. I mean, Misha Tate, I think is the better fighter. She's obviously fought the much more experienced competition. She's been a champion in Strikeforce, all that kind of stuff. So her resume, even though Rin Nakai is undefeated and is, I believe, 17 fights, I think Tate's going to be a little too much. She's got that, you know, U.S. wrestling that seems to be kryptonite for so many Japanese fighters. And if she comes in, but you never know, Nakai can definitely make it fun. But I think if Tate comes in and, you know, tries to take this one to the ground and just fight smart, she should be able to go out there and win. But I don't think it's going to be easy by any stretch.
A reminder, UFC Fight Night 52, Hunt versus Nelson, does take place only on Fight Pass. Fight Pass will not be broadcasted on Sportsnet across the country. Starts about 12:30 a.m. Eastern for you hardcore fans that want to stay up or not go to bed, obviously, and watch the fight. The main card probably starts around 3:30 Eastern as well. Yours truly will likely wake up in the morning and catch up because I do need my sleep. I haven't slept in a while because my little guy has been sick for a bit, and it's my birthday on Friday. So chances are I will not be able to watch. I will not be able to watch the fight. Moving forward, UFC 178, Demetrius Johnson taking on Chris Cariasso. Again, Demetrius Johnson, I've maintained for a very long time, is probably one of my favorite fighters in the sport. He is the epitome of perfection in terms of technique. The guy's absolutely amazing. Fast, his scrambles. More things happen in a Demetrius Johnson scramble than probably a full round of a middleweight fight. I mean, the guy is unbelievable, but he's taking on Chris Cariasso, who I think will have his hands full, but don't tell Chris Cariasso that, Mike.
Yeah, I mean, kind of a makeshift main event here. Obviously, it should have been John Jones and Daniel Cormier. It's a good fight. Obviously, it's not really the main attraction on this card. This is such a loaded card with so many big fights that the main event is kind of just seems almost just like filler, that they just need that title fight on top of this big September card. And, you know, I don't want to like be too hard on Chris Karrueche or anything like that. He has won 3 in a row. He's been in the UFC for a really long time, but obviously this isn't the main event people were hoping for on this card, and I don't expect it to be particularly competitive. I think this is more just a keep Demetrius Johnson active type of fight, but Karrueche is tough. I think he'll hang in there for as long as he can. He could maybe even take it all 5 rounds, but I think Johnson here, this is just kind of another showcase title fight for him, similar to what he had with Ali Bagatinov earlier this year.
One guy getting close to a title fight is the Cowboy, Donald Cerrone. He's in the co-main event versus Eddie Alvarez, who will be making his Octagon debut. For many of us, a long time coming for a guy like Eddie Alvarez. But there is a concern that Donald Cerrone has been very, very fresh, obviously competing so much in 2014, obviously going for that record for a year. But the last time Eddie Alvarez fought was November 2nd, 2013, that split decision victory versus Michael Chandler. He will have some ring rust, but he is training with a great camp, obviously, in Florida. Order there with the Black Zillions. Eddie Alvarez will have his hands full with Donald Cerrone. How do you see this one going down?
Man, talk about a great fight. I don't even know. This is just, it's absolute insanity. Who really knows? Donald Cerrone is coming out and saying that he's never even seen an Eddie Alvarez fight before, which believe that if you will. I don't think anyone's buying that. I'm certainly not, but still, who really knows? Eddie Alvarez, he's finally coming over to the UFC after so long of people waiting, and he's getting, you know, one of the top 10 guys we've been asking for so long. Is Eddie Alvarez really one of these elite lightweights? And I think he is, but is he elite to the sense that he can be top 5, top 10 in the most stacked division in the entire sport, irrespective of, you know, organizations, anything like that? So how do I see this one playing out? On the feet, I think, obviously, there's going to be a lot of striking here, but who really knows? Alvarez, I think he has better hands than Cerrone, but Cerrone's got a better knee and kicking game. So I don't know. This one, I think, is probably going to go all 3 rounds. I don't think either guy's going to get knocked out, but I don't know who's going to land first or who's going to get the better of it. It's really, really hard to say. How do you see it going down?
Well, I mean, for anyone that's watched Eddie Alvarez fights over the years, I'll just say 2 words. Body shots. If he can land those body shots consistently versus Donald Cerrone, he wins this fight. If he can't control the body, he can't control the clinch, I think he loses on the outside in terms of striking, and I don't think he'll be able to submit Donald Cerrone. And I wonder if he can put Donald Cerrone on his back and keep him there for a long time. So I will give the edge to Donald Cerrone, but if Eddie Alvarez can use those, I know it's superficial, it's just surface level analysis, but I think if Eddie Alvarez uses those body shots, he can merge victorious in this fight here. In terms of the featherweight scrap, Dustin Poirier taking on Conor McGregor, a huge test, obviously, for Conor McGregor, with so much at risk for Dustin Poirier. This will shake up the featherweight rankings. I really like this fight here. This is one where, again, I will flip my iPhone the other way around, put it face down. I will not be tweeting. I don't want to know anyone else's opinion. I don't care about anyone else's opinion when this fight goes on. I just want the referee to step out of the way, Mike, and say, are you ready? Are you ready? Fight.
Yeah, absolutely. I cannot wait for this one. It's time to find out, is Conor McGregor the real deal? He's looked super good in the UFC so far. He's taken out some really solid fighters, especially his last two against Brandao, and the Max Holloway win, especially with his knees looking better and better every time Max Holloway goes out there and fights, because he's looking like a really strong featherweight himself. But man, I think I'm going with Poirier here. I think he's so experienced. I believe this will be his 7th UFC fight, or 11th UFC fight, and I believe he had 3 or 4 more in WEC. So I like Poirier here. I think he's the better fighter ground. McGregor is pretty slick in the stand-up. He's quick, but I think Poirier, just he trains with such a good team. He's so determined. He's been in these moments before where he's in this fight that looks so close to a title fight. I know he lost to the Korean Zombie when they fought a couple years ago in that title eliminator, but Poirier, I think he's had his ups and downs that he needs to have, and he seems so focused and determined. He does not want to let Conor McGregor, who's been talking crap about him for seems like almost a year now, does not want to come in and lose this fight after just all the back and forth. And then McGregor, if he can't, comes in and he can win, he's a legit title contender, and he could be even, if not right there, he's probably 1 win away.
Absolutely. I think you're bang on with that analysis. Much more on this card that we should break down, but we only have a couple minutes left. I do want to talk about The Ultimate Fighter, the current season airing on Sportsnet right now, with the ladies, the strawweights. Randa Marcos-Thomas, one of the Canadians on the show, the only Canadian on the show, she pulls off the crazy upset versus Tisha Torres in episode one. Episode two is going to be another great one. I did have a chance to watch it. I can't obviously say anything, but it was great to say nonetheless. I mean, it was great. What are your thoughts, though, on this? Only because, you know, it's one of those feathers in my cap that I, that one time when I interviewed Dana about 2-3 years ago, I asked him specifically, what about using The Ultimate Fighter as a medium or as an avenue to promote women's MMA? And he laughed at me and said I was absolutely out of my mind. Well, 2 years later, here we are. Your thoughts in general?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to say about this, I think. I personally, the first episode was great. Obviously, a great fight. Upset is an awesome way to start off the season, especially with it being a Canadian. That's a good look for us. But, I mean, the ratings for FS1 didn't look that great. It's awesome that they did end up showing it a replay on Big Fox before and after football on Sunday. I don't know what ratings were like for that, but it's kind of not a good look if they are one of the worst season opens ever. That's really disappointing. But in terms of the actual show, I mean, it's a great idea. They are introducing a new weight class with the belt and everything. I thought the first episode was super interesting. But like you, I have seen the second one. I think, I mean, awesome fights. But I'm even just watching, like, the whole production and how I'm already starting to, like, ooh, this is a lot like past seasons. And I could see some people getting turned off with that. The fights are great, all that stuff. But I don't know. Like, I don't know if even with this whole new format and everything, I'm not sure if Tough is refugeable at this point. It might just have run its course. It doesn't really seem like, even with all the promotion they put into it, they did so much. They did a red carpet. They did commercials, interviews, everything. And it just doesn't seem like it's caught on. It's hard to judge from one episode and one rating, but we'll see as time goes on. If it doesn't catch on here, that would just be a really big disappointment, because these girls deserve the exposure and they're great fighters. And yeah, it would just be a bummer if that if it didn't live up to expectations.
I appreciate your time, Mike. For those listening, Mike Bond MMA, make sure you follow him online. Mike, thank you very much. We got to wrap it up, but as always, looking forward to seeing you soon.
Yeah, you too. Thank you so much for having me back.
There you have it. Thank you very much to everyone listening to UFC Central right here on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network.